Okay, you better be moving some part of your body. If you're not, take your pulse, because you're dead. That's the WDR Big Band of Germany, featuring Andy Narell from Trinidad, my homeland, my birthplace, with Ray Holman's Pan Woman. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Tuesday, October the 22nd, and it's open forum. This is where your opinions matter. Your opinions always matter, but you get to guide the conversation where you want it to go. And that's what we do on Open Forum. So why do you call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888? A couple of things, just, you know, to keep the pot nice and warm, and hopefully you will bring your own fire to it once you get on the air, and we can see where it is, what your opinion is of the main stories of the day. Well, we heard about the employment situation. The employment rate, the unemployment rate right now is said to be at 7.2%, a pretty disappointing number, the experts are saying, because only 148,000 jobs were added to the economy. But, you know, there's a whole different way to look at this. 7.2% in some communities would be a godsend. If all we, if we had an unemployment rate in some communities, the African American and Latino communities, of 7.2%, we'd be jumping for joy. But in fact, the dismal news comes from none other than the Economic Policy Institute. We had Josh Bivens with on with us yesterday talking about a different aspect of the economy. But according to the Institute, there's a group of people called missing workers. These are people, they define it as people who essentially would like to find a job, are trying to find a job, but are not getting any jobs. These are people who would be either working or looking for work if job opportunities were significantly stronger, they said, says the Institute. And if you were to factor in this group, which is more than 5 million, estimated to be about 5.1 million, the actual unemployment rate would be 10.2%. Now, let me put a little bit more icing on this cake. 10.2% is alarming, and that should be part of, you know, the figures that we should be hearing about, other than the, you know, the jobs that were added. They are not counting seasonal workers, and that 7.2% includes part-time workers, and I guess you can call them cyclical workers. But there's also another way of looking at these numbers. The unemployment rate for African Americans and Latinos, for African Americans in particular, the unemployment rate consistently has been twice that, at least twice that of the national rate since the 1960s. For 50 years, you may recall that we had Dr. Algernon on with us, an economist. And he was talking about the fact that the unemployment rate for African Americans and Latinos has remained consistently disproportionate to the unemployment rate for the general population. So when people talk about, you know, the unemployment rate is 7.2%, you know, take that in stride. That is just a figure that is just grabbed out of the ether. And when you add up all the different pieces of it, you see what a mess this has been. And this is why It is intolerable that President Obama has yet to devise a jobs program that specifically addresses these specific communities that have suffered so terribly because there have been no jobs for them. And we're not discussing the teenage unemployment rate. That's the unemployment rate for young people who can work and want to work but can't find work. The unemployment rate in some African American communities is estimated goes well beyond 80%, close to 90%. In any part of the world, this is beyond intolerable. But that's the reality of it. So today, most people will be discussing the unemployment rate and the slow economy and all of that, but they will absolutely ignore what the real damage is being done here. They're not talking about that at all. So at some point, hopefully, we'll all wake up and we'll find that the news is at least being democratic, addressing the issues as they are, rather than tell us, what mainstream, it's the mainstream. So the assumption, the arrogant assumption is, whatever it is, the mainstream is, that's the reality. And there's no other reality but that. Interesting news also about the president on the defensive about the embarrassing performance of the technology group. maybe he needs to call in Ed Snowden and give him a little job. Make peace, make a pact, and see if they could get these things to work. But, I was reading a report today about this particular issue of the contracts. And it seems, it's really amazing. The infrastructure, the technical part of the Obamacare is really, it's crashing and burning as we speak. But one wonders who got these contracts. Who got them? And, how much are they getting? I'll just give you a little bit here of what I was able to gather today. It seems that there's a strong correlation between lobbyists, firms that have lobbied heavily and donated to the coffers, the political coffers, and the contracts that they get. Let me read you a piece of this story here. It comes from Alabama.com. And it says, major defense contractors among those contributing to implementation of troubled Obamacare programs. Some of the most well-established government contractors, including some best known for their roles in the defense industry, are among those doing work on the technology side of the Affordable Care Act and its glitch-filled websites. President Barack Obama said his administration is working to solve the delays and confusion over the websites in an effort to reach its goal of enrolling 7 million people by March. The Health and Human Services Department said it could not release a list of those who worked on the site due to the recent government shutdown, but a study by the Sunlight Foundation shows many of those who contributed to the Obamacare websites and the implementation of the ACA. Sunlight formulated the list by reviewing contract information from usaspending.gov and fedbizops.gov. It showed 47 organizations that won contracts from the Health and Human Services Department or the Treasury Department to manage, support, or service the implementation of the Health Care Act. Five contractors, Northrop Grumman, Deloitte LLP SAIC Inc., General Dynamics, and Booz Allen Hamilton, also provide a wide range of services to the Department of Defense. Sunlight Foundation reported each of these provided information technology services to either the Centers for Medicare or Medicaid Services or the Internal Revenue Service, the two agencies responsible for building back components for the healthcare exchange websites. Northrop's contract was worth $1.7 million, while Deloitte received $13 million and SAIC $1.8 million. Vangent, a subsidiary of General Dynamics, received $28 million, and Booz Allen, $2.7 million. The survey does not include awards to contractors that built the 14 state healthcare exchanges. The Affordable Care Act contractor list includes many longtime government contractors and some of Washington's heaviest hitters in the lobbying industry. 17 ACA contract winners spent more than $128 million on lobbying in 2011 and 2012, Starlight reported, while 29 had employees or political action committees that contributed $32 million to federal candidates or parties. President Obama collected $3.9 million of that amount. So there you are. Hello, Mike from Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, indeedy.
Yes, I just want to know that I just want to know the reason why Michael Moore is supporting his health care plan. He has it all over his website, which is, and he thinks it's the best thing on earth. And I just don't know why he would do something like this.
Which Michael Moore, the filmmaker Michael
Moore?
Yes. Oh, well, you know, there's a thing going around with in quote, liberal circles that, you know, Obama is on the ropes and he needs to get support and he needs to be defended, and the Republicans are the evil ones and the Democrats are the right ones. To me, we could live without them all, as a matter of fact.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's unfortunate because I think a lot of people, especially those who have the ability to influence public opinion, you know, sometimes they really need to sit back and think that it is not about their personal beliefs necessarily, but, you know, they're speaking to the issue of policy and policy that affects the country possibly in a very negative way. So they ought to be really careful about doing these kinds of things. But this is how politics works. You know, this is par for the course. People are endorsing things they don't know a thing about. I have not heard, to be very honest, I have not heard on any of the stations, any of the television stations so far, I have not heard anyone raise a question about the constitutionality of this Affordable Care Act. I mean, something as simple as that. They all start from the point of view, it is the law. That's their starting point. And then they could go on to discuss other things. But the fundamental issue, which is where the Republicans are, is challenging the constitutionality of this law. And, of course, the way they handled it, it blew up in their faces because they did not present a united front on this question. So, and they're in chaos, to be very honest. But as we heard, I don't know if you listened yesterday, did you?
Yes.
Well, the presenter was talking about the fact that while today, for example, the poll suggests that the nation, about six out of ten people view the Republicans in a bad light because of their stand with respect to the shutdown and so forth. But he made the point that it makes no difference in the heavily Republican constituencies. They're doing quite well. The people, the Republicans are thinking that those people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio were really standing up, even to the elements within their own party. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you for doing a great job.
Thank you. It's the byproduct of everybody. See,
yes.
Everybody contributes.
Okay.
And you started us off today. That's great. Thank you so much.
You have a great
day. Let me ask you, if I could ask, what is this? What if I could ask you to be our correspondent right now from Michigan? How is Michigan faring? What is the sentiment about the Obamacare Act in Michigan?
Well, Mike, I don't know if you ever heard of Mary Grove College in Detroit.
If the name of the college,
that a woman could go to college to in the United States,
mm-hmm.
called Mary Grove. Well, I had to drive down to Detroit every day, and it's just a shame. It's unbelievable. It's just a mess. It's a complete mess. You know.
Tell me about it. What makes it a click? What makes
well,
it a complete
you know,
mess?
You could be going down a street, and it's about 45, and they will walk right in front of your car. And if you don't stop, you will hit them. They don't seem to care anymore. They're just totally losing it. They wow. Everything has been taken away from them.
Wow.
There was a 75-year-old man getting gas at a gas station, and he's I don't know who they were. They kept on beating him up, and then he was on the ground, and they kept on coming back and kicking him. Then they coming back and kicking him. It was all on camera, just disgusting. So I think Michigan's just starting to, especially in Detroit, it's just starting to lose it.
Oh wow. Well, let's hope that that enough people don't. Okay, let's just
hope
that.
Well, we just hope great people like you just keep doing what you're doing, because I think there's a lot of loving, caring people out there, but unfortunately, we got the monsters in power right now.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for getting things started today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the great, great work.
Thank you so much. Hello, Sarah? Hello?
Hey, Utrece, I'm here.
Hi.
Can you hear?
Yes, great.
Greetings to you, Utrece, and greetings to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll have to go back into the archives. I did not get a chance to hear your program from yesterday, but I'm sure it was fabulous as usual.
Well, we played a presentation by an insider, and his take, it was as if we were listening. The audience were people in the healthcare industry, very important CEOs, et cetera. So it was almost like we were listening in, like flies listening in. It was a very interesting thing. You should take
a
listen.
You might want to try and see Utrece, get that Wendell. I can't remember his last name. He used to work for, I think it was Cigna Healthcare. He's been a lot on Bill Moyer's show talking about how he came into his realization of what the healthcare industry was and how he became a reformer from the inside. But he was the former CEO for Cigna Healthcare. You might see if you might be able to book him as a guest to come on and give us some insight as to what's going on with this sham of a program. But I'm digressing from the free my mind situation. I'm glad a young man came on and he's talking about what's going on with Michael Moore. And as I keep reminding our listeners, we are seeing that all of these so-called progressives who call themselves progressives and whatever, they're all in one. This is one big party. Let's just call it for what it is. The Democrats and the Republican is one party with different wings within this party that do different function, but their end goal is all the same. They just come about it in a different way, and we need to stop talking about we have to be progressive, we have to be more right of center, left of center, and all these different centers that we do. And I'm starting to think that I'm some diagram in some geometry program, the way we keep coming up with these different centers. So we need just to stop it, because I'm glad that you mentioned that, Utrece. If you could mention it when I get offline, mention that article again so I can go online and pull it up that you're speaking of, because I could understand his outrage when he came on yesterday and talking about why the system was glitching and why it went down, because they need to get as many people as possible to sign up for these programs, because it's something, I guess, you know, to pass money to these people, because this is a deal that was made with the devil, that this is what you need to do. We're going to give you these contracts. You're going to sign these people up, and then you're going to have a captive audience for the rest of your life because the IRS is now involved in it, which is why
go ahead. Finish.
Utrece, because I'm hearing all of these, you know, like on my job, I'm with a lot of black folks that keep saying, well, people didn't have health care before. I said, no, it's not about health care. I said, we were doing very well as a people when we were managing ourselves, Utrece. Like an acquaintance of mine reminded me. I have my parents lived into their middle 80s before they transitioned out of this life. Had no illnesses except for my mother in her last few years when she developed some illnesses. But they had home remedies that they took. They did not go to hospitals. They did not take all of these mess that we are being forced into doing. If I don't buy a car, if I don't own a car, I'm not mandated by law to own get car insurance or that I have to pay or carry.
We covered that. We covered this business of the individual mandate. I like the way they put it. The mandate. You have to do it. Well, you know, there's going to be a fight. This is not a done deal by any means. You could expect that there will be lawsuit after lawsuit. And at some point, the issue will arise about the overreaching. This was serious overreaching on the part of the president to leave. I mean, at least pretend, put it in a committee, put it in the House and put it in the Senate committee, let it go through at least the cosmetic changes that you would expect a bill to go through. But to just simply say, look, I can make a law by myself and I know how to do it, and we'll do it like thieves in the night. We'll attach it to an omnibus bill. We'll get it passed. We'll give one version to the Senate, give another entirely different version to the House, and let them have only less than 5 minutes to vote on 2,700 pages of a bill, and then we call it the law, and then have the U.S. Supreme Court not just back it up, rewrite, literally, you heard it right here on this program. The Chief Justice rewrote the petition so that it could pass. I mean, this is insane.
You see, it shows you once again how, forget the Citizens United and all of that, it shows you how all three branches of this government, they are in bed with the lobbyists, with the corporations, and how, who is really running and controlling things. It is not us, like people always want to say that you got to vote. If you don't vote, blah, 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 and all the usual nonsense platitudes they like to put out here. These people are controlled by corporations and lobbyists. Because if all three branches of the government could come on board and say that this is legal, that people have to have insurance, that you must go into something, you must take something, and if you don't do it, we're going to get the IRS, we're going to get the big bad IRS to dip into your bank account and take this money from out of it if you don't do as we say. This is ridiculous. My car insurance, if I let my insurance lapse, my car insurance is not going to dip into my bank account and says, okay, you're driving this car, you let this car insurance lapse, I'm going to go ahead and take this money out of your account that you should have been paying for this insurance. They don't do that.
No, but you know, again, this is one of the things on an administrative level, the role of the president, Barack Obama has done so very often. I mean, he has just decided that he's a law unto himself. He doesn't have to go through the regular, the regular rituals. That's for people who are not so smart as he is and his advisors. So he'll learn this lesson. In fact, he's learning now. It's an embarrassment. It's flying back into his face, but I don't know if he's not, he's actually getting the lesson. Thanks, Sarah, for calling.
You're
Thank
welcome,
you. Thank you. Eric from Brooklyn, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing, Yatrice?
Great, great. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was the last time I called, I didn't have much time, but
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I was talking about a comment that another caller had made regarding why is it that people continue to vote for these same people, you know? And the way I was thinking about it is because I think it's a form of insanity. I think a lot of people have come to worship wealth and worship the money so much that they want to be like the people that are damaging the society and the world. You know, they want to be like a Bloomberg. They want to be like Obama. So you know these people, and you were saying similar things in that black women. Some of the people in some of the professors in my classes, you know, they have this idea of Obama, where he can do no wrong. So regardless of how many examples you point out to them of how he's deceiving the people, and especially, you know, people that look like him and the people that are suffering the most, they refuse to even discuss it. You know, they just, you see this look come over their face and they give you that little smile like you're too young to understand. And, you know, and it's such a shame. You know, it's such a shame. But I also wanted to talk about, you know, what I had said before about the Democrats and Obama being the most destructive. And he made, with this healthcare bill, he made a crucial mistake. and that is that it's forcing everybody to buy into this system. And there's a potential for so many people to lose. And I think that's why we're getting this backlash. And it's great. You know,
it isn't forcing everybody. You see, this is what is particularly insidious.
Yeah.
This bill is aimed directly at people who already have been profiled
mm-hmm.
as people who are working poor
mm-hmm.
or poor or working class.
Mm-hmm.
The rich have they don't have to worry about Obamacare.
Of course.
Right? People with very good jobs that are covered by the job don't have to worry. This is a law that will use poor people
mm-hmm.
as, you know, cannon fodder. They just feed you into the cannon because it is going to be a huge money mill for the insurance industry.
Absolutely.
And it is a thank you.
But it can't
So anybody who has that,
uh-huh.
I mean, that kind of a lack of conscience where the people you are supposed to be protecting, the people
uh-huh.
you're supposed to be helping, like I just said, you know, the unemployment rate is the worst for African Americans. It has been the worst in 50 years.
Yeah.
This is crazy. And you would think, give us something.
This is my point. Like you said, for 50 years, I mean, this is longer than 50 years, black people, I mean, all over the world.
Administration after Democratic administration.
Yeah, as a result of the Eurocentric view and the domination of the world, you see black people suffering for decades. You know, and this is what I look at when I look at the situation of black people around the world. It's one of loss. We've lost consistently. And what I'm talking about, everybody being included, is that who's the majority in this country? Who's the majority in Europe? You know, it's white people. White people who have looked away. And now their parents in an aging society where you have, you know, I mean, how many millions of elderly people? Who's going to suffer? They're going to be forced into that pot of suffering people. People that are losing, their children are going to be forced into the pot of people that are losing. And that's why there's such a big, you know, debate. And people are somewhat, not yet, because I don't think they're still trying to really gather themselves. You know, they're still trying to figure out, wait, this is actually throwing me under the bus. Yes. Yes. Just like everybody else has been thrown under the bus. You know, now you're going to have to wake up and regain a little bit of humanity and a little bit of the destruction of other communities that has been allowed by the predominant, you know, people in this country.
But what is happening literally involves everybody, because it has to do with, and I've been talking about that for a while, the
mm-hmm.
nature of this thing we call democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in that sense, everybody is affected. We know that we definitively hit the point where major corporations are running the show.
Mm-hmm.
We know that this president is not calling his shots. He is being advised
as
to what
him.
He needs to do and what he has to do. That's right. He's a run guy. He's being run. But the thing is, when you reach a point, I mean, if this were a white president,
mm-hmm.
the words fascism and totalitarianism and all the other isms you could throw out the window would have come at you at 100 miles an hour. Because when you reach the definitive point that this particular president has made mm-hmm. is to, I mean, have the state declare war on the citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And basically compel you to do something. And, you know, it is amazing that how calm the mainstream, I mean, people are very calm about this. If you know, they will report, well, you know, those ugly Republicans and those silly Republicans and those angry Republicans, and this is what they're doing, and people should hate the Republicans because essentially it's all about tacit and overt approval of Barack Obama without looking at the systemic issue that is so critical here. Does the state, when has it been that the state has a right to tell you what to do and to configure an operation where the heavy lifting is going to be done by the least able to do it. And it is wrong. I don't care if it's law. It's wrong law. We've had wrong laws before. We've had the law that said, you know, black folks are three-fifths of a person. That was a U.S. Supreme Court decision as well. The U.S. Supreme Court said that, you know, the black man has no rights that the white man need respect. Yeah. That was a law. The U.S. Supreme Court decided at one point the Japanese were white, and then they changed their mind and said Arabs were white, and then they changed their mind and said anybody with a Spanish surname was white until they saw people from the Dominican Republic. And they said, redo. You know, all these are, quote, legitimate laws that were made in this country. Crazy, stupid laws.
Well, but the people
to hide behind the U.S. Supreme Court now and say, well, it is the law. Well, it is a stupid law. And in making this law, none other than the Chief Justice actually broke the law. That's what we discussed right here on the show.
Yeah.
So there you go. It points again to the need to, I mean, both parties to me are just completely irrelevant at this point. And it means that you have to grow a whole different approach to leadership. And I just don't see that this Democratic Party should be given any further support or credence from these constituencies because we've gotten nothing back from it. It makes no sense. Thanks, Eric.
It's going to take a lot more loss, and, you know, it's unfortunate, but hopefully, just the way they're doing it, I think that was Barack Obama's big mistake. All of this is too much too soon. You know, usually it's a gradual deterioration. They do it over years. This man tries to do it over a period of 5-6 years. He's going to wreck everything, turn everything, you know, reverse everything. And this is what I'm talking about. Hopefully people will lose a lot. People will lose a lot as fast as possible so that it's not a complete destruction of the world before they decide it's time to change, you know. So I appreciate your program, and I listen all the time. And thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
Harvey, we'll take your call from Berkeley, and then we go to fast break.
Hi, Utrice. Harvey.
Hello. Good. How are you doing?
Very good. Great show once again. I'd like to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but I'd like to make a little comment on single payer. You know, the problem here is that the insurance company, they don't want to be dealt out of the game, but they have to get something. So I think that we should give them gun insurance. In other words, take them out of the health insurance and put them in gun insurance, and maybe that'll be, you know, that'll give them something to work with so that we can get on with single payer. But I'd like to talk about Trans-Pacific Partnership and jobs. It's the free trade thing. I think Trans-Pacific Partnership will actually hurt a lot of indigenous people around the world. And it turns out that, for example, I went to the Google and I put in the words free trade American corn into Mexico. And when we had the free trade and we sent in tons of subsidized American corn into Mexico, and what happened was that's exactly when the flow of illegal immigration into America happened. The farmers, we undercut the farmers there. A lot of them came as immigrant workers to America. A lot of them went to the slums of the cities. But essentially, we ruined the indigenous environment. And corn was where Mexico started. They couldn't afford to grow their own corn anymore. And that's one example of what happened. Another thing is...
It's not that corn is where Mexico started. It's the other way around. Mexico is where corn started.
That's right. Mexico is where corn started. I'm sorry. Mexico is where the birthplace of corn. And here they
I'm doing a lot of research on the Trans-Pacific Partnership in order to prepare a series on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot that still needs to be known about it. We know quite a bit, but there's still a lot that needs to be known. But you're onto a good point here. And here again, we come into this issue of the constitutionality of things. If you've been paying attention, one of the basic illegalities here is that we have a reversal of roles. Treaties such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership should actually emanate from Congress. The president needs to bring these matters before Congress and they're supposed to be voted on, especially since they involve trade. But nobody in Congress knows anything about it. This has not been brought before Congress. This has not been discussed. The policy has not been discussed. What exactly it would mean in terms of trade has not been discussed. I see a lot of position papers put out by unions talking about the impact on U.S. jobs, and they're almost unanimous about that, that it would have a negative effect on jobs, not just here in the United States, but it will so tilt the work relationship in respective countries that they're trying to add here.
So the
basic point for the Trans-Pacific Partnership that needs to be discussed is the constitutionality in the way it is being going, the way it is being negotiated. I mean, the U.S. is actually negotiating already, and they've had several, they've had about 17 or 19 meetings already. But Congress has not been informed.
It's a terrible situation. You know, a lot of the countries that are particularly involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership have large indigenous populations, and they will be wiped out by this free trade. And so I feel also that our jobs, once again, will be sold. It'll be a spiral down to the lowest possible denomination, and we'll just be, you know, it's a way for the corporations to bring us all down to our knees. So what they did with Mexico is they brought in cheap corn and brought the farmers down to their knees. Then all the land was used to grow other crops, which were exported to another country, which brought their farmers down to their knees. It goes round and round, and somehow they control us all this way. So I say just say no to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, especially because of the massive destruction of the indigenous people in a lot of these countries.
Well, thank you for that. It's a very sobering thought. And again, I'm looking at it. I've been studying it. So look out for some programs on it coming very soon.
Thank you so much.
Well, I thought we were going to go to break, but no, we'll take another call. Hello, L.A. How are you doing?
Hello, Utrecht. How are you doing today?
Good. And you?
Good. I'm doing fine. Thank you. Very interesting comments from all the people calling in today, and it just leads me to the same point again, which is just they're just degrading everything, and just the word was debasement, I believe.
Debasement
of
a society. We got that from Hugh the caller, yes.
Right, from Hugh. Debasement of the whole political process and the whole governing process. I mean, just everything. They're just taking it down to the lowest level they can take it. And I think in some ways the fact that this guy does overreach the way he does, and this might be a good thing, actually.
I don't see it as a good thing at all. I mean, I think it is terrifying. And
it is, but in order to have a new beginning, sometimes things have to get pretty bad, like the previous caller was saying. He hopes that people lose a lot and all that. Well, in a way, I kind of agree with him, because we have to find a way to get people off their butts and do something, you know, a mass movement, or just at least a mass exodus from their system.
But listen, I mean, one would think that all the things that have happened so far, you would have gotten a sustained opposition, and we see that people are just too tired to mount such an opposition, but it has to happen. And because everybody's running roughshod. You know, for example, I don't know if you listened that day when I played this tape of Nancy Pelosi saying, you know, when she was asked, well, how did these contracts get, you know, added to the negotiations when the shutdown was being negotiated, and she says,
"Right, yeah."
She says first, "Why are we discussing this?"
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes back and she says, "What difference does it make?"
Right.
Now,
right.
When you see that is the attitude,
right?
And
exactly.
You know, that is the moneyed attitude and the entitlement attitude and the idea that I have power, and I could abuse it if I want. Now, they made this agreement, which is now, they're acting as if it cannot be undone, But everybody is now wondering, well, gee, how did Mitch McConnell get close to $3 billion for his private, and acting like it can't be undone?
Right.
it's now the law. You see, it's now the law.
To address your point, though, about people at this point there should be an opposition that's already there. I think part of it, a big part of it, is that people are scared, but they're also distracted. They have all these gadgets and. You got people playing Candy Crush when their health care is being messed up. You know, I mean, all these, you know, Facebook and all this stuff, people are distracted. And plus the media just feeds into this. It's too high for you to understand, and we'll just lay it out for you the way it's supposed to be, and you don't have to worry about it, that type of thing. It has to come to a point where there is so much pain out there, so much suffering.
But you know, when there's suffering, here's the problem. We also, the working people, working poor people, they're the ones who suffer the most. These folks are actually inoculated against suffering. They have enough money. They're not even living on income. They're living on interest from income, so they don't have any problems.
Well,
it's the working people who will bear the brunt of the suffering. This is what's going on now with Obamacare. They're feeding people into this thing, this funnel, getting into this machine that's going to grind them into dust. It doesn't matter. It is predictable income, and that's what they need. They need numbers quick, fast, and in a hurry. And you take the most vulnerable people. This happens time and again. So, I don't know except to say that the time has come for people to think differently and to act differently. The time has come because what we're facing is just so, but I mean, for some people, you know, it's an overwhelming thing. How could you fight every single day and not lose it? You know what I mean? For some people, it is the struggle is so immediate. The struggle, literally, for some people, as we see now with the food stamp loss, people are wondering how they're going to make it from Monday to Tuesday.
To invest in anything else
is a luxury for them.
Another interesting aspect, Eutrice, is that people don't know what to do. They see that if you try to do like Occupy, you get out in the street.
Very good
they're
point.
Going to bring
Very
the cops
point.
Out. They're going to knock you over the head or spray you with pepper spray. But this cannot be a violent revolution. People have to think in a different way. You can't beat these people with violence. They have every weapon. They got the worst weapons on the face of the earth, so you can't do that. It has to be a mass rejection of their system.
Absolutely. Reject them all and start from scratch.
Right.
Build something new.
Like people are rejecting this healthcare thing. I heard that the numbers are like dismal. People are not going for this thing at all.
No.
So if they would do the same thing with these major banks, do the same thing with their phony elections that they put up every 2 years or whatever, do the same thing with these major stores, just don't even patronize them. That's how it has to be, because we're not going to win a violent revolution in the streets. But there has to be a revolution.
There's got to
and
be.
I think that's the best way to proceed.
Because more and more people are coming to the same conclusion, that whatever it is they're selling, we shouldn't be buying, because this is a lying entity. Government is no longer credible.
It's no longer credible. It's being controlled by corporations. They're all bought, and that's everything they do shows you that. So people are starting to realize that. I agree with you. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for calling. How is it going out there in L.A. with this, by the way? What is your feeling? How is this Obamacare going out in L.A.?
Well, It depends. I mean, I think a lot of people in L.A. are shielded from this, too, because you know that Los Angeles area has a lot of wealthy people and things mm-hmm. like that. But I think when you're talking on the streets, I think the poor, like in some of the ghettos and barrios, I think they're going for it because it's better than what they had. At least they'll get some kind of coverage. But middle-class people out here, the vibe to me is that they're rejecting this thing and they don't like it. And it's and they're the ones that are going to be hurt, and they know it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of vibe I'm getting.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for calling in and lending your voice to the collective opinion today. Thank you. 888-874-4888. This is something that is profoundly affecting people, and there's a sense many people can't really put their finger on it, but I think when you stop to think about it, the nature of government, it has become predatory. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. It feels like these are scoundrels, you know, and thieves and all the bad things that you don't even want to associate with government. This is what we're dealing with. And in a weird way, you see, it's very weird. I grant you that. The Republicans, the guys who are standing out there and screaming to death about the Obamacare and whatnot, even terrified their own party. Terrified the party because it sounded as if they were issuing a moral clarion call that they have, that people of conscience have a duty to object. And there's no scripted right time or wrong time. There's only the judicious time and the appropriate time. So even in that world that is so normally righteous and moral, you see how they fell apart when it came time to just face the thing down and said, okay, we have to go another route. We can't fight that way anymore because that is too ugly. But what the others are saying, and this was the point made yesterday, in Republican districts, and which is what the midterm elections are all about, midterm elections are all about congressional fights and gubernatorial fights, they want to capture or recapture their base. And there's a strong base, and the reason that we think that they're so much to the right, so extreme to the right, is that they feel that this government has gone way to the left. But it's not true. The government has gone so far right, it's not even funny. This is the enigma here. We have the perception of a liberal president, but it's just that. It's just a perception. When you look at the actions of the president, you have great cause to be concerned. And again, Harvey just brought up another example, you know, that points to the same thing. The Trans-Pacific Partnership. These kinds of arrangements and policies are not to come from the president. That's not his milieu. That's not his area. Congress should be fully involved, but they're not involved. In fact, they're complaining. What is going on? We don't know anything. So you wonder what is going on in the president's head. Why is he so consistently out of whack with just, you know, figuring out what he's supposed to do as president? The things he ought to be really engaged in, he's not engaged in at all. It doesn't bother him at all. He's convinced that he doesn't have to talk or deal with anybody. And that's all thug Chicago, thug politics. And that's what that produces, Blagojevich, and it produces Rahm Emanuel. That's who they produce with the same mindset. We are smart. We know what we're doing. We're not like those dumb folks out there. We went to the best schools. We have the best educations. We have the biggest brains, and we can outsmart them. They think that they could outsmart us. And the mad grab, it's like, we need money. We want money, 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 money. And they're doing everything to get their hands on money. We just saw a corruption occur publicly. The members of Congress were told that we're voting on these items, and they thought they were voting on these particular items. When the vote went down, they found that they were voting to give Mitch McConnell almost $3 billion as his private Jobs Act. And, you know, a million or two here to study flatulence and cows that never did make, I mean, how did this happen? This is the kind of stuff that thugs do, and thieves hiding in the night. This is the kind of scuzziness that you expect that these folks would have overcome, since most of them have money. But, of course, they're playing with other people's money, so they don't care. And Nancy Pelosi would stand up there and tell you, as the day is long, there is not one single earmark in this budget. It's just the way it is, and I don't even know where this other stuff came from. And why are we talking about this? And what difference does it make? When you have somebody who can say that at a time when this country is furloughing workers as being, quote, non-essential, unquote, and you have somebody saying, what difference does it make? If $2 or $3 billion is authorized, what's the big deal? That is the kind of attitude that becomes emblematic of this administration. And that is so unfortunate, because so much hope and optimism were riding on Barack Obama, that he would be a different guy, he would set things right. Obviously, he can't make everything right, but he can do these things that are long overdue. The jobs program is 50 years overdue, and yet he stands up there and tells people the road ahead is going to be hard and long. In other words, you got to hurry up and wait. I can't even bother to get to you. I'll get to you whenever. These are the outrageous things that should get people very angry, to the point of taking action and moving in a whole different direction. The system has become untenable. It has blown every single gasket out there having to do with, you know, good governance and freedom and democracy and all the other things that they tell you about. This is not it. And more people are gravitating toward that conclusion. This is not it. This is not what government is supposed to be like or feel like. The government is feeling like a monkey on my back. I can't get it off. I just can't get this, shake this thing that is hounding me all day and has infinite numbers of ways to do me in. That's the feeling that you get. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. I want to thank you, Mike, Sarah, Harvey, Eric, Green from Baltimore. Oh, I didn't see Green from Baltimore. I'm sorry. I missed you altogether. So, well, we'll make up for that tomorrow. Let's join each other again tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and we'll continue the discussion. But if you haven't listened, if you didn't listen yet to the program yesterday, please go to the archives. It's really very, very informative. It gives you an insider's view of how these folks are thinking. It's very instructive. So take care and have a little jump up on me. Here we go.